employment-related daycare one, limiting it to families under 150% of federal poverty level. People are expected to get out of poverty, they need to be able to work, they need the assistance, so we object to that cut. We also object to not adding caseload staff for TANF medical food stamp caseload increases. This is a state with the highest unemployment rate in the nation, trying to assist people to get back to work, to get out of poverty, and to lift themselves and their poverty in dignity out of poverty. These are, we believe, counteractive and counterproductive cuts, and we would ask the restoration of all of those three programs.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Yes, Gordon, Counties, Paul?
For the record, Gordon Foltz, Association of Oregon Counties, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we share a lot of the sentiments you've already heard. We, as your local government providers, if you will, of a number of services, are concerned about the cuts we're trying to go through now, the new list we just received, to understand it. But my understanding is that House Bill 5091 incorporates not just these changes, but DHS rebalance issues and some other issues, and we're trying to siphon out everything to see what happened, because it appears, for instance, in some of our areas, alcohol and drug, public health, mental health, that there are some major cuts that have occurred beyond what we're seeing just on the list. And we'll try to spend the weekend, appreciate the bank not being open until we have a chance to take a look at it. Our concern, however, comes to not just what we have lost, because we're in a place where many counties are laying off employees as we speak, and we don't know what we're going to have to advise after this special session. But we're also in a place looking at legislation that's requiring us, for instance, to do mental health planning, and understanding that that cut has taken place somewhere in this system. So if that has occurred, we have no money to plan, no money to do services. We still have legislation requiring us to do that at a time when we're laying off employees to just do the normal caseload. So we would like to see if there's any chance, if we cannot find a way to reinstate that, to at least eliminate the requirement at this point, because we cannot afford to do it. I mean, that's quite frankly where we are. So that's just another consideration. It goes beyond just the cuts. It goes to the legislation that requires us to do various things. So I wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Harper,
can we address that legislation?
Yes.
Can you give us some information on what legislation you'd like us to
offer? It's House Bill 3024.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman. We support the bill. I mean, don't let me get wrong about that, but we are concerned that it's a mandate without funding the minute this money goes. Yep.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. The witness brings up an excellent point, and I think there's also another question or another concern that you can help the committee with. One of my concerns is that we need, as we're analyzing the budget, we need to be very clear about where we may be jeopardizing our capacity to leverage federal dollars. And as we look at the materials we have in front of us now, it isn't clear where we may be jeopardizing federal dollars. We heard one instance already from someone who testified earlier that we could see a loss of several million dollars in the educational arena. But we need some way of looking at that piece of information as we're looking at these different budget categories and the budget options.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, we will be glad to take a careful look at what we see happening here with respect to the potential of loss of federal dollars. I think the other thing, as you well know, many of these services, as has been mentioned, are the exact services that you want in place at this time, and we are just continuing to cut them. So it's very significant to not have them available when people most need them. Particularly, I refer to here the alcohol and drug services, for instance, which took a major cut in the last special session. Some folks interpret that inadvertently, but it nevertheless did cut outpatient alcohol and drug services, and it has been a severe loss to folks who needed it. So.
Thank you. Senator Shields.
You've kind of triggered something in my mind, and that is that during the regular session, when we look at budgets, we look at when you cut, like you just were talking about drug-related stuff, you look at, all right, you made a cut here, but what's it going to do over there? in terms of criminal justice, police, court costs, whatever. Was there much of that in, and I wasn't on the committee, but was there much of that analysis done in the previous cuts of the previous special sessions? Have you heard anything? I mean, you're looking at some specific cuts here. What are the costs going to be elsewhere, and will you end up, I mean, if we're trying to save money, are we really going to save any money in the process?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, we have already observed over time, not just with reference to the last two special sessions, that cuts to these systems that we're talking about have resulted in greater increases in the correction system, the juvenile system. We have people that should not be there who are in those systems that should be being treated. So the cuts that have occurred to the treatment programs have resulted in what we have experienced here in just in the last couple of sessions, special sessions, is that the loss of the programs have obviously resulted in the loss of the staff, which have resulted in lots of folks going without treatment, which have resulted in more beginning to go, although we haven't got those numbers for you directly, into other systems, into going anywhere at all.
It began 20 years ago.
And it began 20 years ago, but it has been exacerbated, if you will, in the last year.
Okay, thank you. Gina?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Gina Furman. I am the director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And I would like to reiterate what Gordon said, but I want to bring a couple other pieces of information. Many of you spent 2 days a month for over a year planning the ideal mental health system. A lot of work was done, and the result of that was 3024, and the planning on. Counties are expected to do the planning now without the money. Many counties in good faith are embarking on that. They didn't have the money to do the planning, so they have taken the money out of existing service dollars, expecting the promise of being paid back. Because of local budget issues, because of state budget issues, Clackamas County just laid off 19 mental health workers. Jackson County just laid off 12. We're seeing that happen more and more. We have an issue in Coos County where I know it's been, you know, said, well, you know, they have a little bit of extra money in their building fund. Why couldn't they use that? Their building is about ready to be condemned. They're serving their mentally ill in places that would make you mentally ill to stay there. So I think that what I'm asking is to really look at the 3024 planning, either take it off the table if we don't get the money, commit to really taking another look at that planning money and giving it to the counties, because many of the counties have already started the planning, and it's the robbing Peter to pay Paul, and we really do need an ideal mental health system to serve our clients well. And I know many of you have worked on that very hard.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Morissette.
Gina, you mentioned the two counties. Are there other could you give us a list of other counties or just a big picture list of layoffs?
That's the big picture, but I've just spent 3 days with the mental health directors, and I can certainly get you a list.
Gina, could you point out on the reduction sheet where this reduction occurs?
It's on page 11.
I do not see it on this reduction page.
So you don't know if it has
We just got this 2 minutes ago. At 2 o'clock in the morning yesterday, it was passed in the House Bill 5091. So we haven't really had a chance to analyze where it is in the process.
Okay.
But it is in the bill, 5091.
All right.
Paul? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. And I'm appearing this morning in opposition to the $1.6 million cut in community corrections. Mr. Chair, Gordon and I have worked together for over 20 years. He does human services, I do public safety. We have noticed over those 20 years a serious interconnection between the two. And I think Gordon and Gina have highlighted it already, and I'd like to emphasize a piece of it. People in the health system, people in the mental health system who don't get the treatment and services they need don't disappear off the face of the earth. They wind up going somewhere else.
usually they're picked up by the public safety system, and they either wind up in the hospital emergency room, or they wind up in the county jail, or both. Issues that we're concerned about primarily with respect to community corrections, Senator Courtney raised an issue, was there an agreement in 1995? Yes, there was. The county's understanding and agreement was that we agree to supervise this particular population, and the state agrees to pay the cost of county supervision. Well, part of this issue in this cut is inflation in the county program. Another issue with respect to it may have to do with workload. We're not entirely sure, but I think so. In any case, I have before me the corrections population forecast of April 2002, and I'd like to just emphasize a couple of things that are in it. There are three different categories of offenders that are tracked in this community corrections system. Felony probation is up under the previous forecast by 320 cases. That forecast would have been up by another 350 cases. Those are misdemeanors who are convicted as, I believe, felons and later treated as misdemeanors. A footnote there says this doesn't necessarily mean that these people have been dropped by the caseload. They've just been dropped by funding. This is the DAS population forecast. The second piece of this is parole and post-prison supervision. This forecast is 216 cases higher than the previous forecast for this biennium. The third piece is the local control population. That's the 1145 group that we usually talk about. Although this indicates that that population is down, it also explains why it's down. And the explanation that I've highlighted here is the decline came from Multnomah, Washington, Wayne, Marion, and a handful of other counties. A decline in length of sanction, which drops the people below the radar screen for funding, but doesn't take them off the caseload for supervision. A decline in length of sanction drops the case.
Amen, Paul. Gina Fleming, would you stay here? Because there's a correction to your statement that you and Mr. Fultz made. Mr. Fultz, would you not leave? I'd like to correct the record for your statement before you leave. Go ahead, Mr. Slaughter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The decline came from Multnomah, Washington, Lane, Marion, and a handful of other counties. A decline in the length of sanction caused the drop in the sanction population. That's primarily Multnomah and Lynn. But then it goes on to say, information from the affected counties indicates that lack of jail space led to an overall decrease in length of stay rather than a decrease in the number of local control offenders. We have, I believe, a letter from the Community Corrections Funding Committee dated yesterday reiterating a couple of these things and indicating that reductions in county jail space, as much as anything, is precipitating this drop, and indicating that over 300 jail beds have been reduced in Marion and Multnomah counties alone. So the problem here is that not that the people under supervision have declined, we can't keep them in the jail long enough to get them counted. And just to emphasize, reductions in mental health funding and health funding, reductions in community corrections funding, I think we need to look at this from the standpoint of the systems approach. We're courting some really serious unintended consequences if the cuts occur in the health and the mental health system and we further cut community corrections. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have a staff member here that can respond to your concern that you issued in the bill that was passed this morning. Sheila?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to I'm Sheila Baker with Legislative Fiscal Office. I just wanted to clarify, because there is not a complete budget report yet with all the line item detail, in the budget pages that I think people have, there, it shows the disappropriation of the mental health, House Bill 3024 planning and services money from the emergency board. There's also disappropriation for the safety net clinics and the home care commission related to Department of Human Services. Those shows disappropriations to the emergency board because in the net DHS number, they're allocated to DHS. So that money is moving from the emergency board to the Department of Human Services budget. There's no additional cuts in those areas from where they ended up at the last special session. So I just wanted to clarify that, because you couldn't tell that by looking at the numbers. But there are no additional reductions in that.
I wanted to make sure you didn't get run over by the train.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gardley.
Thank you. While staff is here, could we also clarify then what is happening with the public health programs that are listed on page 10?
Senator Gardley, this may not be the staff room, but that may be Tom Britton.
Okay.
So I would ask you to withhold your question at this point. Sheila Baker came in specifically to address the mental health issue because she works in the mental health area. But as far as some of these other areas, that may be John Britton's area.
I will indicate, Mr. Chair, overall that in the Department of Human Services budget, if you look at the budget bill, those numbers are very confusing, because as part of their rebalance plan, not as part of any of the particular reductions, but as part of the rebalance plan, there are significant reductions in the appropriation line items, general funds, moving to the director's office as part of an internal reorganization that was approved by the legislature, and a shift of funding where the director's office previously charged for its services as a prorate to those divisions and program areas. They are now eliminating that, and the funding is shifting directly to the director's office. So if you look just at the numbers, it looks like a significant program reduction. In fact, the program reductions are pretty much limited to these items that are on this sheet here. And I believe there's not much there for the health programs per se. But the numbers that you see are not reflective of the extent of the actual program reductions. It's more of a fund shift. And again, as we get the detail completed for the budget report, you'll be able to see that better.
Great, thank you.
Senator Clinton?
Yes. Just your committee member, Paul, some of the things you said were incendiary, and I don't understand it. You said there's been a reduction in what was the phrase you used about sanctions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, among the ways that they count the 1145 population is someone who's received a sanction that's 31 days or longer. Larry knows this probably better than I. One of the reasons for the drop in the population is that there are a number of people who are receiving less than 31 days.
Well, is that because judges know their beds, the places are crowded, or the people aren't committing crimes that are more serious?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I believe that the sanctions they're talking about are imposed by community corrections, not by judges. And the reason why this indicates...
Are they imposed because of bed space?
No, they're reduced because of bed space.
All right, thank you.
They're imposed because of...
All right, so bed space is... The lack of bed space is causing community corrections to send people for less time on 1145.
That's what the court...
You said there was a loss of 300 beds. You don't mean there's a loss of 300 beds. It is, there are 300 beds out there they're not using now. They simply don't put... Because they don't have guards or people... Is that what you're saying?
And I'm saying that between Marion and Multnomah County, 300 beds have been taken offline because of county budget cuts.
So there's 300 beds that are there. They're built. There's bars, there's bunks.
Right.
But they don't put anybody in them because they don't have a staff.
They've been cut because of...
No, but that's what I mean. I just please, I'm not trying to argue with you. I need to know, because Judiciary Committee people think we thought we would build 300 more beds versus you've got the beds built, you're simply not putting people in there, even though you need to put people in there.
Yes.
Yes to second one, not to the first
second one.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank
you for the explanation you gave earlier on what went on, and hopefully you'll give us some material over the weekend that us fans can better enjoy the process and understand what happened.
Mr. Chairman, make another comment.
Yes, if it's brief.
Yes, it is. Committee members, I want to thank you for having Sheila clarify that. I would point out to the committee, though, that the 3024 planning and services money was cut in half last session, so we're still at half, and $2.7 million of alcohol and drug treatment money was also cut.
Yeah, Okay, thank you. Senator Marzette?
Well, I just wanted to ask Paul for the letters that you referred to, all of us.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll get, we distributed these, a few of them yesterday. I have some more. Thanks.
All right. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 5091? Ellen? Anyone else?
Good morning.
Morning.
Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe, Public Policy Counsel for the Columbia Willamette United Way. And I wanted to raise a question that I don't think has been fully discussed, although the chair alluded to it. And that's that I would ask that as you look at the items in here for proposed adjustments, reductions, that you also then relate them to the sources of funding that are being reviewed by your colleagues at the other end of the hall, because I find it somewhat strange that many of the reductions are in the area of health, and yet one of the sources of funding we're going to use is an increase in the tobacco tax, where we have a great many of those costs in health directly related to tobacco use. And so I would hope that you would look to a correlation between the needs that are being addressed in programs and then the sources of the funding. And I would add that members of the board of Columbia Willamette United Way have been participants and will be now again in efforts to really look at tax reform in Oregon. And so as I've heard the various people respond to the different parts of this budget, it really suggests to me that it's a general obligation of all Oregonians for many of these. And so while we can look for tobacco taxes, and appropriately so, to respond to health needs and to make sure that we have some resources for prevention, education, and cessation in that area, perhaps it's time for all of us as Oregonians to look for our participation as a corporate group in responding to the need. Some families, like mine, disconnect will hit part of it, and the Measure 88 will hit another part of our, but we would then be part.